When I went online to see what I could find on Sweet Girl, your new novel, I'm finding all of these awards that are tagged onto it. Michigan Notable Book 2017, Plowshares Best Books. I could use up 5 minutes listing all of them. Congratulations.
Thank you. And I'm fine if you want to list all of them in 5 minutes.
Do you have all these things on your wall of your study? Or
I am aware of them, yeah. It's been great. Yeah. And I feel super fortunate. Been totally unexpected and fun.
And this is your debut novel, right? Not your first book, but your debut novel.
Correct. Yeah. I had a collection, of stories, a novella and stories, also about Northern Michigan that came out from the University of Michigan Press in 2005. So this is my first novel.
Well, you are a Michigan native from Petoskey, but you're in the Carolinas now, right?
Correct, yes. I have been here for a long time. Well, since like 2002, I think. So it's been a while now. But I still identify as a Michigander.
Because your books keep coming back home. Now, why do you use Michigan as your background? What is it about Michigan that holds you?
I think some of it is that I miss it, you know?
Well, come
I grew
on
up
back.
There. yeah, my kids are in school here. My wife's got a good job here. So I think we're going to be in North Carolina for a while. But I do like I'll always consider Michigan home and Northern Michigan in particular. And I find that kind of the longer I stay away, the more powerful and bright my memories are of it. And I think there's something about growing up in a place that's hard to replicate. So I feel more connected, you know, to my hometown and to the state of Michigan than I do to other places that I've lived. And I still I really strongly identify with Michigan sports teams and, you know, my kids all root for the Lions and we're still very much, it's weird. It's sometimes I have to remember that my kids are actually from North Carolina and not Michigan.
And maybe weather has something to do with it, I wonder, because this novel, a big part of it is this huge Michigan blizzard, which especially those who live in the upper part of Michigan, Petoskey, Upper Peninsula, those areas, you'd know about snow.
And the thing about the blizzard is, this is something I've kind of realized in doing interviews. When I grew up in Petoskey, you know, pre-internet, it was a really, you know, I feel like the isolation was more extreme. And maybe that level of sort of isolation isn't even possible now in our more connected world. But I do remember distinctly winters and just having nothing to do and just snow upon snow upon snow. And I think I spent a lot of my life like looking out the window at snow. And being in the snow, and it really just sort of stuck with me. So, you know, when I was a kid, there was 3 television channels, you know.
Yeah, I remember that.
yeah. So, I try to, every time Ronald Reagan gave a speech, you had to watch Ronald Reagan or you had to shut the TV off. There was no other option. So I just spent a lot of time, I think, kind of connected to the weather in ways that, might not even be possible now.
So with that hint of what Sweet Girl is about, go ahead and give our listeners who haven't read the book yet a tantalizing tease, a synopsis.
It's about a 16-year-old girl whose mother is a drug addict, and she has gone missing. And the 16-year-old girl, Percy James, who's the narrator, becomes pretty concerned when a big storm starts to gather, and she hears that her mother's been spotted somewhere sort of out in very remote rural northern Michigan, and she goes to find her mother or attempts to find her mother. She goes to the local sort of the meth kingpin's farmhouse, and in the search for her mother discovers instead a baby that's been abandoned, and she attempts to get the baby to safety, and that's sort of the premise of the novel.
There's a tug on the heart as you read it, because I think we're seeing this more and more in real life, what happens, you know, with the opioid and other drug epidemics that are going on, that kids have to become adults while the adults
yes.
are kind of zoned out. What kind of background research did you do on, you've got different, not just meth, but different drugs going on here. Some of them, like the balloons, the one uses with the gas, pretty bizarre stuff. What kind of research did you do to find out about how people who are that addicted survive and live?
Well, I mean, with the exception of meth, I mean, a lot of the drugs in the book I did, as you know, it wasn't intended as research at the time, but you know, as a young kid growing up, there was a lot, you know, some of that stuff was around, and so I participated in it, and so I knew that part of the world. But I think the meth stuff in particular, because I didn't have a first-hand experience with that drug, I just kind of tried to extrapolate what I understood about rural drug culture in general and apply it to that. And I did not do a ton of, like, you know, I wasn't sitting in a library researching methamphetamines. I felt like I knew the characters well enough and I knew the area well enough that I didn't have to do a ton of that beyond just sort of things that were particular to the meth world. And that was all easily accessible through a Google search or two.
And unfortunately, Michigan and meth go together, sadly,
yes.
quite a bit, especially in rural areas, I believe.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when I started writing the book, it was kind of before opioids were as well established and well known as sort of the rural drug of choice.
Yeah.
So this was kind of in that window.
Tell us, before we return again to the book, something of your journey as a writer. How did you get started?
That's a great question. Well, I was about 20 years old, and I was living in Petoskey, kind of working weird jobs. And I took a night class at the community college, North Central Community College. And I had an English teacher who told me I was good at writing. And I, you know, didn't believe him at first, but sort of stuck with that, you know, it was like a positive sort of message from the academic world that I kind of latched onto. And that, you know, I just started writing and reading, and it really kind of gave my life a focus at that point. I had been out of high school for a couple of years and not doing much. And that was sort of, I was like, okay, well, this guy says I'm good at writing and I like writing, so let me do that. That was really as simple as that. Once I kind of started to do it, I just stuck with it.
Well, there's a nod to good teachers who encourage their students. It makes a difference.
Oh, yeah. It's a huge, I mean, the teacher's James McCullough, and I wrote an essay about him when the novel came out because he made such a difference in my life. Mm. And I still, you know, talk to him, and I just saw him this summer. We had coffee, and,
nice.
You know, he doesn't remember a lot of the stuff that he did or said to me that made a difference. But I do, you know, and some of the stuff is really stuck with me. And the most important thing he taught me, and I wrote this in the essay, is he told me, I remember meeting with him in his office, and I was really like an up and down student. And I said, yeah, I'm just not living up to my potential. And he said, no, you're living up to your potential. This is what you are. You're a occasionally smart student who still gets D's.
Occasionally, I like that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, he said, this is it. This is who you are. You're a struggling student at a community college, and this is what you're doing, and this is your life. And that was kind of a slap in the face that made a difference in how I applied myself, for sure.
Well, if drugs and addiction are one major issue in society today, the other one is violence, unfortunately, random
sure.
shootings, that kind of a thing. So that takes a big part of the story, too, the violence, the shooting that keeps happening. How did you decide to approach that? And when you were in the drug scene yourself, did you see a lot of that?
No. And I'm really careful to, like, not make my own life a big part of my sort of discussion of the novel, because, you know, there are so many people that have so much more interesting stories. I don't want to take the Pepsi challenge with people on the crazy things they've seen in the drug world, because my stuff was pretty limited there. but I do feel like I understood, you know, the antagonist Shelton. I felt like I could really get inside his head and understand the way that he viewed the world and saw the world. And so Violence kind of became a natural extension of that. Mm-hmm. So it really was just felt very sort of, I came to it very easily because it just seemed like this is what would happen next inside of in Shelton's world. So it didn't feel like a huge stretch, that stuff, even though I don't have any, you know, personal experience with shooting people. Mm. So
it was interesting to me as I read the book. I was really struck by how this one little thing, this young girl going to look for her mother, this domino effect, and it's present in pretty much all novels, but somehow this one, I was really aware of that, how one thing triggers another and each one gets a little bit bigger. And this innocent scene turns into several deaths, this tragic wander through the snowy woods. And I'm not going to give away the ending here. I was really intrigued with how you did that. I loved the way that one thing led to another.
No, sure. Yeah, it's a great point. And there's two things I can say about that. The first is that I think you're right that all novels hinge on an event. And I remember being in graduate school trying to become a fiction writer and being like, really, I had an issue with this novel that we read because the whole thing started with this cat scratching a woman. Mm. And I'm like, 350 pages based on a woman getting scratched by a cat. This is crazy. I remember my teacher, Lee Zacharias, she said, look, you're going to start worrying about how novels start. You're never going to write one because they all have to start with some incident. And I think that's absolutely true. And I think, like, for me, you know, I just had this image in my head of this girl in a hooded sweatshirt discovering an abandoned baby. I don't know where that image came from, but I was interested in it, and I just sort of explored it. And that's where the novel came from, was me sort of unwrapping that image. And I think that that's the way a lot of writers come to their work.
You know, listening to you, Travis, I think I just realized what felt different about your novel when you mentioned that cat scratching a woman, and you're doing something similar. I think most novels, you have this opening scene that's, you know, already a mass shooting or some big pow, you know, that right. gets you in there. But yours starts with a relatively innocent, small action that keeps getting bigger. I think that's where the difference is.
Yeah, and I think it's the main character's decision to, like, take that first step and then take the next step and to keep going. And as things escalate, she continues to sort of decide to hang in and keep fighting. And I think that's an interesting way of looking at it.
So did you have an outline, or did these dominoes, one triggering the next ones fall, was that something that surprised you as you wrote?
Yeah, I envy any writer that can write a novel off an outline. If I'm outlining something, it usually means that my work is not going that well. I think I usually sit down and it's sort of a process of discovery for me about what the story is. And there's no real, I can't apply any sort of, like, this is how I write a novel. It's a messy, nonlinear process. It just sort of happens. And it ends up being a process of, like, putting together a puzzle. Mm. And you have lots of scenes that end up not fitting. And it's like the process of figuring out what fits with what and what doesn't fit. And oftentimes the things you want to fit don't fit. So you got to fight with yourself about that. So it's a really, like, messy, extremely frustrating process to get to the end.
So set aside that envy for outlines. I think what mm-hmm. you're doing is right, because you're allowing your character to come alive and decide where she and the other characters want to go without you pushing them.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
What were your thoughts on writing cross-gender? I think that in itself is a huge challenge.
That's another great question. I felt like originally I wrote Percy's sections in third person. Mm-hmm. And I felt like something wasn't quite right. And her voice kind of came to me one day when I was driving in my car. I started hearing her sections in her voice. And when I decided to write in her voice, it went really quickly and really easily. And the only thing I can say about writing from a different, you know, from a woman's perspective or a girl's perspective is that I didn't really ever think of her as a girl or a woman. I just thought of her as Percy, the character, and how would she interpret this? So I tried to avoid the trap of falling into, you know, what would a girl do here as opposed to what would Percy do here? And I think that helped me.
Did you have anybody who read your manuscript at some point to check that? It's like, yeah, a girl wouldn't say that, or a girl wouldn't do that.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, my agent, Susan Raymer, she read it. She reads all my stuff, and she was like, she made me take out a whole section because I had added this section because I thought that Percy needed to have a romantic interest in the story. And she was like, no, take all that out. That's
ooh,
garbage.
Good call.
Yeah, so that was where I kind of got off my footing because I was like, oh, well, I need to fill her out as a character and show her as a, you know, what she looks for in a romantic relationship in addition to these other relationships. And, you know, my agent, she was smart enough to say, just chop all that out.
There are some touching scenes in there, being an animal lover, about this dog, Old Bo.
Yeah.
In a way, it's kind of gruesome because this dog is dead and he's in this farmhouse and not, you know, getting pretty fragrant after some time. But I don't think that gives away too much when the dog's owner decides that, hey, it's time to do something about this dog. It was a very touching scene.
Yeah. And I think that one thing about Shelton as an antagonist is trying to avoid the trap of just seeing him in the role of sort of the quote unquote bad guy, just kind of create, you know, the character that he would be, which is complicated and messy. And he loved his dog and, you know, he made a mistake and his dog died and he's been in grief and also ignoring the reality that the dog is still in the house. You know, it kind of drives everything he does in the novel because in essence, you know, the dog was his best and kind of only friend.
Yeah.
I think that's important, you know, because most criminals are not, you know, these sort of like monolithic humans that are only bad.
Yeah, I think it's a very effective technique that you've got there. You know, like you said, it's not black and white, that you show this person as he's got a very tender side, which he also shows with the woman that he's with in that farmhouse, but especially with that dog, that he's got more facets to him than, you know, that you start to feel for him in some ways as well. He's a fully rounded human because of that dog.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah.
I also noticed, and I hope that's not giving away something, but sweet girl, that refers to not just the baby. There's a moment when the mother calls her daughter sweet girl, and that just kind of jumped out at me.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yes.
Oh, good.
100%. Yeah.
I thought it was genius.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And I guess you were the genius also that noticed it, because it's not very... You know, it's not.
It's subtle. Yeah.
It's subtle. Yeah. I mean, but yeah, it was the idea that that it's both, you know, Percy and the baby. And I felt like, you know, that was one of those moments in the novel that happened where I was like, oh, this makes sense. You know, I didn't plan that. It just sort of happened.
I loved it because when mom calls Percy sweet girl, you realize, you know, Percy had to learn her tenderness and her care for this baby from somebody. And again, it's a way of showing that an addict is a fully rounded person. Before that addiction took over, there was mother's love and you know, she was somebody besides her addiction. So I think in that one moment, you showed a lot.
Yeah, yeah, I appreciate that. That's a great compliment. And I like to be able, you know, to accomplish a lot with a little bit is good, I think, in novels. I'm not the writer that wants to write an 800-page book, so you got to be efficient.
Tell us about your first book, Greeting from Cutler County, which was a novella and short stories.
Yeah, it was, like I said, it was about the same lightly fictionalized northern Michigan, which I call Cutler County. And it was essentially stories that were mostly about sort of younger people trying to figure their place out in the world. And it dealt a little bit, too, with northern Michigan's tourist economy. And it was essentially the first stories that I started to work on and to write, and that sort of I stuck with over a couple years, and you know, it was sort of a lightning bolt when I got that book published. I didn't have an agent at the time, and I just sent it off to University of Michigan Press, and this great editor that was there at the time, Christopher Ebert, who's also a novelist himself and writes about Michigan. And that was so it was sort of like one of those lightning bolts that struck. You know, it's been a while since I've really gone back to the book, but it definitely kind of kept me in the game for a while. So I'm really grateful for it.
So what's next? Short stories? Another novel?
No, I'm definitely sticking with the novel.
Okay.
I think it's in large part because it's easier, you know, like when you write a collection, you got to tell like 12 different stories. I think short stories are harder. They're just, you have to tell a whole story in a limited amount of space. With a novel, you know, I feel like you have time as a writer to sort of get in there and play with things and have a little bit more fun. And I feel like it's a better format for me. So I'm sticking with the novel, and I'm sticking with, for now, Northern Michigan.
Any hint, or dare we ask, of what that next novel is going to be on, other than Michigan?
It's always
too soon.
It's not too soon. I'm far enough along in it, but I'm pretty superstitious. But it's about.
I hear you.
Well, let's just wait and see. I'll tell you this: it takes place in the summer, so it's not a winter book. I wanted to do a summer book, but it's got the same sort of connection to the landscape.
Good enough. We'll stick with that. Well, when that summer book comes out, knock on my door and let me know. We'll bring you back.
I will. And thank you very much. And you have a great voice. You have like the classic NPR voice. It's very, it's a good voice.
Well, thank you. It's been fun talking to you, Travis.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye. Appreciate it. Yeah. Bye.